This amendment legalized domestic propaganda on the American public.
The CIA could manipulate the news in the United States.
It's different for the media. So everything you learn about this, you're learning from us. Because those who sit in power over the television, over the radio, and over the press is constantly telling those who are the masses how free they are.
Yo, 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 what's good, y'all? It's another episode of Kill the Mockingbird. I'm your host, Sean Chris. Right now, we're about to bring on a real special guest. I don't know if you guys ever have checked out the podcast, The Ripple Effect. Ricky on there, the host of that. He's going to hop on for a little bit, and we're going to chop it up. And
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. I just wanted to get you on here because we've been trying to do like almost like an everyday thing, like at once a day, and try to get everybody involved, talk to the people, like in the comments, people will tap in, stuff like that. And I get, try to get some guests on here to discuss some of the things that you discuss a lot on your show, you know, about censorship and a lot of the technocracy that's going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a more and more important issue every day. I mean, it's like every day you see some new channel completely disappears off YouTube or Twitter account gets censored, and it's endless. I mean, it's become more and more obvious that there's an agenda and that there's something going on, and that it's more than just like, hey, we're trying to protect people from like violent speech, or we're trying to just get rid of hate speech. It's like, no, I mean, you're purposely restricting people who just have different opinions, not people who are telling people to be violent or promoting violence, just literally people who just have a opinion that's different than the mainstream narrative. And I think that's super dangerous because, like I always say, I'm sure you heard me on the show many of times say, people should have access to all the information. Then from there, yes, they can make a logical decision on where they stand on any specific topic. But when you're restricting information and you're saying the only information you can see, which means that the only information that you can use to establish your opinion is our information that we're going to say is truth, and everything else that goes against that isn't truth, then they're controlling what truth is. And it's a huge issue.
Oh, most definitely. And then that's what, like, I've been saying since the beginning as well, is like, just with the mask, for example. Okay, like, we can go back and forth on do they work, do they not work. But my whole thing from the beginning was like, okay, what's the side effects? Like, if I go to the doctor and he prescribes me a medication, he's not going to be like, here you go. And I'm like, hey, what's the side effects? He'd be like, I don't know. Like, you got to know what's going to happen. So if people have lung issues or certain issues, what happens if you wear it for 12 hours a day? What happens if you have to work in it and wear it? Like, what can really happen? And they're not giving people that opportunity to make an informed decision.
Yeah, I had Dr. Scott Jensen on today. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's the guy. He was kind of like the death certificate whistleblower that was that was going around being interviewed.
Was that the guy from Minnesota?
Senator and doctor. Yeah, he was on today, and hopefully we'll get that out in the next 24 hours or whatnot. But he, that's one of the things we talked about is masks. And a lot of people are pretending that they know for sure that it helps with this or doesn't help with that or whatever. And it's like the science isn't settled. It's not settled. We don't know if there's any long-term effects, like you said, any harmful effects. But we kind of do know that it's really not going to prevent the spread of a virus. I mean, most people who are wearing masks, they're touching their face more often than not, because the average person is, I mean, I think somebody on my show or somebody I discussed with this topic in my personal life said something along the lines that there has been a study and it proved that people don't touch their face as much. But one thing that came to me when I was actually talking to Dr. Scott Jensen today was that study was probably based on doctors and nurses
yeah.
who wear them all the time and are used to it. You know, where the and also they don't wear them for that long. I mean, you wear it when you go into surgery, you wear it when you go into the room, and then you take it off once you come out of the room. So that study, I wouldn't say is valid. Most people who are wearing them now, they're not used to it. It's bothersome. They don't, you know, they don't forget it's there, and it gets sweaty. You know, you're working in a, I mean, I remember when my kids, you know, I don't have a whole lot of experience in a surgical room,
yeah.
but I know when my kids were born and my wife had C-sections, it was cold as all hell. So at least they didn't have to worry about it's, you know, sweating yeah. where like most people, they have kids wearing it during soccer practice. They have kids wearing it during martial arts. They have waitresses. My wife's a waitress. She, you know, the outside seating obviously is very, very popular of late. And it's hot, it's humid. You know, we live in Massachusetts. It's been hot and humid, and there's places
I'm in Michigan, China. I feel you.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Like, she's out there sweating all day. She's she hates it. I mean, she, you know, it just, it's real uncomfortable, and you're touching your face more often than not because of it. And so anybody who says otherwise, I just tend to disagree, because just about everybody I've talked to, or just witnessing going somewhere and seeing people who have to wear it, I mean, you'll see them, you know, pull it down under their nose to get some fresh air. You'll see you know, just pull it down just to kind of get some fresh air because they're sweating or whatnot. So it to me, it's like, you know, we have to go back to the root of this whole issue. Why are we doing it, right? And we're doing it because supposedly there's an increase of these numbers. Well, the numbers are based on some tests which are proven to be inaccurate,
mm-hmm.
give false positives. There's people who are testing positive for coronavirus, but yet not testing positive for the anti or for the T cells or whatever, their immune system response that they test for. So they have six different tests. All of them give different results. Some of them give more false positives than others. There's tons of information being suppressed about hospitals. It just completely just inflating the numbers. I mean, Dr. Scott Jensen, I mean, that's what he when he first went viral, that's why he went viral, because he was talking about the new CDC guidelines where they're giving you a lot of leniency and flexibility on
what COVID death was, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so it's like if we have to get to the beginning of this story, it's like, okay, forget the masks. Like, even if you can argue that wearing a mask helped, you're wearing a mask for false reasons, for based all on lies. So it's like you have to get to the beginning of all this. And it's like it was all about flattening a curve, which, you know, happened. And then it was like, no, now we have to close things down. And if we do open things up, we have to have all these new restrictions and all this stuff. And it's like the long term effects of this. I mean, literally the way we're fighting the virus, the cure or the method that we're using to fight the virus is worse than the virus itself. It's going to have more negative effects on society, on communities, on people's psychological long-term effects on their psyche, because we're social creatures. We're not supposed to be by ourselves that long and that that long period of time without social interaction. I mean, we're required. I remember there was this I forget what her name was, Rebecca Costa, I believe. She's a best-selling author, big into like the tech world. And I remember her talking about studies that said people are the most efficient and at their best if they have like 5 to 6 hours of interaction, just social being in social environment,
like around people you love and friends, right? Like stuff like that, right?
Or really, honestly, just almost any social environment.
Right.
There's people who hate their jobs, right? But they like the people they work with, and that makes it, you know, that makes it a little easier because they're at least they're bullshitting with people.
And
like
you're really right, because like, you know, I'm single during all this shit. So like, I was like, whatever. And then like, when I went out with some girls, I was like, man, I was like, dang, I'm liking her a little too much. It's because you haven't, that's a month without interaction. You know what I mean? Like just talking.
Exactly,
and I'm not talking about like, just sitting down with somebody and you're like, dang, man, it's really nice to have a conversation with somebody, like besides over the phone or Zoom or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's definitely something that we miss. I mean, I love the fact that we have this ability to, like, for example, we could connect on social media or using the internet.
Yes.
But there is something that we miss via, you know, using technology that you can't capture in person. Right. I've only had a handful of in-person podcasts, ones with my buddies, or, you know, I did these shows called Fights with Friends where we would actually hang out in this studio, watch the fights and hang out.
Okay,
and,
cool.
We you know, we haven't done one in a while, but those were fun. And I had a couple of guests, Mike Martins from All That Remains, the guitars of All That Remains, a metal band. He was in studio. And it's like anytime I do a in-person in-studio podcast, or just it's easier to get to that casualness, to the, get to that comfort level.
To that where you're flow. Like, okay, I think the flow is so much better because you can, I don't know, you just feel their energy. And like you can do it over the phone sometimes. And some people have good, if you have a good chemistry with somebody, it can still work. But you are totally right. Like in person, you got that flow of where the conversation just connects and you can actually go off of each other. You could see their motions, how their hands are moving. It's just not the same as video, text, or calling.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a, you know, it's just, there's something about human interaction, you know. I mean, it sounds silly, but even like a hug or something like that. I mean, a child, for example, gets hurt. You give them a hug, they immediately start feeling better. You know, even adults. I mean, you're having a bad day. Somebody hugs you. Somebody that you love hugs you, and you immediately start feeling better. There's something about that human connection. I mean, you think about prisons, for example. You're around the worst people in the world, and the way they punish you is putting you, basically putting you as far from those people as possible by yourself. And it's a punishment because even though you're around probably shitheads and people who are, you know, are not people you would hang out if you were out of prison, that's better than being alone. And so I think that's without a doubt. I mean, there's something about human connection and whatnot. You know, people are calling this the great reset, you know, there's
huge.
Yeah. Because I think there's huge societal,
well, yeah, because the longer you, because what do they say? It takes two generations to change. You know what I mean? Or that's like that one ex-KGB guy was talking about the takeover, like communist takeover. He says it's two generations. Yeah. So after two generations, you can indoctrinate the kids enough to, and they've already kind of done that. If you look at the universities and what's been going on, the indoctrination has been pretty much worked to plan. Because if you look at, like, I'm 37, right? And I can see the people a little bit younger than me, and each, like about the 25, I would say about the 25 year old mark right now, it seems that they are, them and down are like just in drench. And I know there's people in all generations, but I mean like a big core of their, that population of youth is entrenched with celebrities and what the news said. Like they believe what they've gotten into, this, like whatever the internet says, Twitter, TV, and they follow it, and they're able to, that's the only people they listen to. That's why, like, when the guidelines come out, they're like, and they've been in, like, oh, we hate Trump, and now everything's focused on let's talk Trump. Because then they even drop stuff, like CDC dropped today saying, like, well, wearing a mask doesn't, for a prolonged period, doesn't stop infections. And then you can show people that now, but it's like that first message, because we got into that, they've indoctrinated people to go for that little 30-second clip, 15-second clip, you know what I mean? So everybody's tuned to, we need, like, fast information that's, like, jumps out at you. That's why the apology, like, if someone goes out and says, hey, you did this, 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 and that, you know, and you prove they were wrong, but that first initial story is all they hear, and you're never going to get a chance to, even though they'll put that, oh, yeah, it was false accusations. That's a small little storyline. And I think that has played a big part in it.
Yeah. Sorry. I lost you for a second.
Oh, you're good.
I think it was. Yeah. All right. We're back.
Back. Cool. But you know what I mean? I think there's been a lot of brainwashing going on. That's why it's been so easy to accept a lot of the bullshit that they have been feeding people.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, there's plenty of great documentaries about it. Somebody who's become a friend of mine throughout the years, Richard Grobe, did a documentary called Psychology of Control. No, it's called State of Mind, Psychology of Control. It's a full title. Goes all the way through the beginning of history, you know, how those in power have always found techniques and ways to use propaganda and control people and control the masses and make them feel like they need them and whatnot, and they keep them safe and all this other stuff. So it's not a new technique, you know? And I mean, a long time ago, I mean, they used to be able to use violence, right? I mean, they could just like kill people. But now as we've become more civilized, some might say they need to find indirect ways to kind of confuse us and control us. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of people listening, I'm sure, are familiar with Edward Bernays and the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and and, you know, his uncle wanted to understand the brain and human tendencies in nature, and Sigmund Freud and Edward Bernays wanted to take that and take it to the next step, and that's understanding how to control people, you know, how our decision making isn't always something that consciously we know is going on. Like, it's sometimes subconsciously, in many cases subconsciously, there's things that are going on that are affecting our decision making, affecting why we feel a certain way, why we want to lean a certain way on a certain topic or issue.
Well, emotions are a big key of that, because like that's what happens with triggers a lot. Even me personally, sometimes if you don't have that action of stopping yourself, you go, you see a headline, you see a video, and you're like, this mother, oh, wait a second, hold on, let me read into it more. But if you, the initiation usually kind of triggers an emotion, I think that's what happens. And if we can't control our emotions, we pour out. And I think that, to me, is how they've kind of manipulated a lot of people, is with emotion.
Yeah, well, I think emotions is one of those things that, especially in the alternative media community, we almost forget about. So there is a, there's this podcaster, Hunter Motz, which we were doing for a while. We were doing a lot of shows together. He's he was co-host with Brian Callen on his other show called Mixed Mental Arts, and him and Brian Callen grew up together. They're best friends or whatever. Well, me and Hunter really clicked, and we did a bunch of shows together. And that was something we would talk about over and over again. How we all like to believe that our emotions are something that like we have control of and aren't affecting our decision making or how we feel on certain things. And but we're all human, you know, and yep. It's same thing. You know, I talked about it with Dr. Scott Jensen today in regards to just science, right? Like everybody wants to put science on this, like, or scientists, I should say, on this pedestal where like they're these super moral creatures that, you know, that don't have all the same, yeah, and they don't have all the same flaws that that the rest of us have, where they have profit motives or other motives, ego motives, anything else that might be affecting the way they look at things. And we like to think that, like, yeah, they're like great, you know, these great species of humans that are more moral than we are and only care about what's right and what's wrong. And it's like, that's ridiculous. You know, like, we're all human. I mean, the only difference between like a police officer or a doctor or a priest or myself, anybody else, like it's the uniform we're wearing, the outfit we're wearing. You know, at the end of the day, like, we all have the same triggers. We have the same issues and the same flaws in regards to, like, you know, subconsciously having trauma or something like that that can affect our decision making or whatnot. So it's like, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, we everything should be questioned, and nobody is above being flawed and having being corrupt or just not having a good moral compass. And we shouldn't forget that.
Or even just about, like, for instance, like, I always use this example, like Thanos, right? Everybody is the good guy in their head. Like, if you think you're doing the right thing, like, for instance, if Bill Gates is like, man, like, I'm not saying he's trying to depopulate, but let's just put it, say he is trying to depopulate the world. If he thinks that that's the better, he's like, I'm doing it for the better good. You know what I mean? It has to be done. Like, I think that we always think that, like, there's this evil and good, but, like, it's just kind of like a constant battle, like you said, within ourselves and our emotions. And, like, everybody perceives themselves as the good guy. Like, the terrorists, like, the guys in ISIS aren't like, oh, man, we're evil. They're the good guys and we're the bad guys. You know what I mean? Everything's perspective. And I think when we can put it into perspective and we could kind of start to collect our emotions and learn how to, like, pause and move back, I think that helps a lot. Like, it's not an easy task to learn, but I think it's something that we do have to explore a lot more.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, it's something that's come up a lot on my podcast of late, is just the idea of, like, challenging ideas, and also letting your ideas be challenged. I had a long conversation with Pete Evans. He's this Australian famous kind of chef, like best-selling author and whatnot, but he's kind of got thrown into the alternative media world because he was willing to talk about alternative medicines and talk about the corruption of big pharma and when the COVID thing happened. He talked about, you know, dietary ways to help fight viruses and all this stuff. So he kind of got called like this fringe person and conspiracy theorist or whatnot. But we had a long conversation about this, about how, like, you know, even in the diet and nutrition world, people like to be married to a idea. You know, it's like they join a team, like, I'm the keto team, I'm the paleo, you know, and I'm a keto guy. I love, I've been eating keto for, you know, I don't know, 6-7 years, who knows. But I've been, but I understand that, like, if somebody comes on and they're of a different tribe, I'm open to their ideas and I'm open to their science and I'm open, because before I was a keto guy and I really enjoyed the science and kind of the benefits of that, I was tricked into believing other things were better for you and whatnot. So it's like, I can easily be tricked right now, or I could be, or there could just be new information that comes out that's going to make me reevaluate where I stand.
I forgot what episode I was listening to, but I was listening to you yesterday and you were saying something like that. That's why I really was like, yeah, I connect with you, is because you're like, I'm not about tribalism either. I'm about individualism. I would check your shit out. I want to understand everybody and have empathy for people and understanding and open-mindedness of it. But I don't want to be blanketed, because I believe we have to be ourselves and our own creature and our own development. And this whole tribalism groupthink is kind of a really thing that's holding us down from our evolution to become that next step.
Well, I think it's divide and conquer, right? I think some of it is just our maybe natural tendency to be tribal, but mm-hmm. some of it's also they're giving us reasons to dislike each other and focus on what we have different from each other and kind of ignore the fact that we probably have much more in common, you know, the majority of people. I think they do that on purpose. That's why they, you know, they promote certain protests and they want all this, like, you know, this division in society, because it's much easier to control us when we're fighting amongst each other and we're not focused on the fact that, like, all these people are taking money from the same places. In some cases, all these people have been on the same pedo island. You know, it's like it's you know, they're much more in cahoots than we think in many cases, you know. So but they don't want us to focus on that. They want us to focus on, like, my neighbor who might have a Trump sign out, or my other neighbor might have a Biden sign out, and they want me to find reasons why to dislike them. And I mean, to think about it, I mean, just the fact that in America we only have two dominant political parties, and that most people join a party and then they agree with their party on just about everything. Like, humans are much more complex. These issues are much more complex. Our thinking and our philosophies, our personal opinions should be much more complex. Like, the fact that any of us can just pick a team and then agree with them on everything, that should make you reevaluate, like, okay, do I coincidentally happen to just agree with this team on everything? Or is it because I've joined this team and I'm defending that team because that's where they stand? And again, yeah, trying to find the root of your reasoning, the how it got started, like, what could have brought me to this place where I now say this is where I stand on this specific issue. Like, we should reflect, you know, self-reflect, self-analyze, recalibrate every once in a while and try to figure out, like, what the fuck, like, why do I believe this? Why do I think this? And have I been kind of unknowingly kind of jumped onto a tribe and think that I'm right, you know? And that's why I always say, like, you know, I was talking to Scott Jensen today. You know, it's he was getting shit when he would be interviewed on Fox News. And people like, oh, why? His liberal friends would be like, why are you going on a right wing?
Yes, right away, labeled.
And then he would go on BBC, and his conservative friends were like, why are you going on a liberal station like BBC? And he's like, honestly, I didn't even know BBC was liberal. He's like, I don't pay attention to this stuff. And it was like one of those things where it's just like everybody's just kind of defending their team and they don't even look at the information, and it becomes harder and harder to share any information, right? Because I mean, I've been during the peak of the lockdown when I try to be unconfrontational, but in some cases I'm like, if it's a good article, if it's a good something, a good documentary, you know, I'm sharing it, and if it comes with you know, some debate afterwards, then be it, you know. But in so many cases you're getting these little debates with people online, and then you share an article, they're like, oh, that's from that publication, so that's bullshit, or that's from, and I'm like, okay, I don't fucking get it. Like, every publication you can say leans one way or another, or has some other agenda. So, like, either we say we can't have a conversation about it because you don't want to look at the facts, or we just, you know, we just play this ridiculous game where we just critique every publication that somebody shares because of where it comes from. It's like, you know what? There's going to be people from one side who are maybe don't have a good moral compass. Maybe they it's not because they're a good person, but they might expose some corruption, do some good and expose some corruption because they don't like the political party that person's in. It might not be for moral reasons, but we can't excuse the fact that that person was corrupt and they got exposed. Like, so my point is, like, not everybody's not everybody who gets exposed, and not every article, not every research is, if you go to the root of it, maybe it's not for good purposes. But at the end of the day, if the outcome's good, then that's what's important. You know, if Fox News exposes a liberal for being corrupt, and if that liberal is really corrupt.
Yeah, if it's actual facts, who cares who's giving the information?
Exactly. You know, I guess that was my long-winded point.
If Charles Manson's like, hey, this is how we get peace, if he shows you something that's correct, regardless of what their past or what they've done, if the correct answer, if it's 2 + 2 = 4, then of course we have to believe them. He has shown proof it's fact.
Yeah, the Charles Manson example is actually a pretty good example, because that's like an extreme example, right? Like, if Charles Manson says, hey, Jeffrey Epstein's a pedophile,
yes.
I, you know, we shouldn't say, like, hey, oh, he's a murderer. Yeah. And he's like, oh, wait, I got like flight logs and I got pictures. And yeah. Like, yeah. But, you know, it's like, no, well, OK, you're still not a good person, but you are, you know, you are sharing some valuable information.
See,
so,
but I thought,
yeah, without a doubt.
I thought that like this is with political parties or tribes or anything. My belief in how I was raised is that I'm supposed to be harder on them. You know what I mean? Like if I vote for a certain candidate, I'm not going to be like, yeah, I'm going to be harder on him than his opposition, because I'm going to be like, hey, do your job, man. Like, you know what I mean? And I don't understand where we stopped doing that. And now we're like, that politicians have become these celebrities and like how they're supposed to be. And they're trying to push it more and more. If you notice, that's why these younger ones are trying to make them, especially with social media. Now they're trying to be these little social media darlings and we're here for the people. They tell you the same thing, but they get like a little more. It's different because now that it's not on TV, they can respond to, you know, people feel like they're part of it. Right. And I think that this rock star mentality of politicians is really killing, not of course with the money in politics, but this is what's like killing the free thought, because now they've become like idolizing these politicians. So if you say anything bad, it's like talking shit on a pop star, and you get these little teeny boppers that are like, like, and you're like, what the hell? Like, this is politics. This is not about like me. I'm independent. It doesn't matter what this guy thinks or this guy thinks. What I thought how it's supposed to work is a Republican makes it a law, and then the Democrat, they go, okay, look, let's dissect it. This part's good. This part's good. Hey, can we work on this? They're supposed to meet in the middle. And I don't know how we got so far from that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I think that the power of social media, Instagram, Facebook, all this stuff, it humanizes them, right? Like, so what ends up happening is that we watch them on these social media accounts, and we watch them online, and you see them with their families and all this stuff, and you forget that like they could be monsters, you know, and that it could be all theater, you know. And it's just, you know, I see it sometimes, like my wife will watch like the morning show today, I think the Today Show. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the Bush daughters are there, right? And,
I've heard, I haven't watched it, but yeah.
And yeah, because neither you or I want to contribute to those ratings. But the thing is, like, you know, I remember walking by the TV and I'm like, why the fuck are you watching this? I'm like, her dad's a murderer. She's like, well, she seems like a really nice girl. I'm like, maybe. Or she's just as psychologically like crazy as her father is. Like, on TV, like, TV is theater. It's fake. It's not, you know, you can put out any persona you want. Same thing people do with social media, right? Like, I know people on social media. And I'm not going to say names, but on my personal account on Facebook, who I'm friends with, who are in dysfunctional relationships.
Oh, yes.
But their persona that they put out there is that they're happy, they're smiling,
everything's great.
It's like, yeah. And it's like, it is a facade. It's not real. It's a facade. And so I think, you know, one of those things we have to constantly remember is that it is a facade. It's not real. And it could be real. But we have to remember that in many cases, especially when when you grow up, you know, as a Bush or you as a, you know, whoever it may be, or Clinton, whoever, you don't grow up in a normal life. You don't grow up in a normal lifestyle. These people have ideologies. These people have justifications for their wrongdoing. I mean, I think, you know, like you said, like Bill Gates, he's a perfect example, because it's like his eugenics history, it's interesting to know, like, if he truly feels like he's making a difference and he's doing something for the greater good, or is he just a fucking evil person who is doing evil things and he knows it and he's just addicted to power? Who knows?
You know, or a combo of it. You know what I mean? Like you said, like, it might have developed him to that. And then once you get a taste of power, because I think humans are the worst at power, all of us are. It's a very difficult thing to maintain power without either being too nice and lenient and walked all over, or being too tough and strangling everybody. It's like such a delicate thing that we haven't learned how to master.
Well, a perfect example of that is how many people say, I hate my fucking boss. And then they get promoted and they become that boss they hate, right? I mean,
parents too, you know, they go, oh man, I hate him. And they become their parents. They do the same way because you learn from what you, and that also happens because a lot of people, cause like, I know, like me, I was never like really good at school, and you know, people like, oh, I'm really smart. But then I learned at one point that there are certain people that are really good at retaining information. And then there's other people that are really good at always questioning information. That's me. Like, I'll be like, why do we gotta do that? And they'd be like, well, you got to. Well, why? Explain to me why this is this. And I think that a lot of people have come complacent to where they're just like, put the information in my brain and I'm good. Like, and it frustrates people like us that are like, well, we need to know why. Like, you can't just say, hey, you can't wear shoes anymore. And you're like, well, why? It's against the law. But why is it against the law? You know what I mean? You have to break. That's why masks are so difficult and all that, too, because you're telling us to do something, but you're not giving us the reason that it can or even what it can harm us. So we can make an informed decision of, hey, maybe I won't go to the store. Maybe I need to do this. Because if I have to work for 12 hours, because everybody keeps saying about the doctors. And I go, have you ever worked in a warehouse? Or, you know what I mean? Unloading a truck. The guys that are wearing the masks inside of those trucks on high-lows and all that. I'm surprised there hasn't been more people passing out. And kind of like, I would think there would be more injuries from that.
It's probably just a matter of time before a kid passes out. My son does martial arts, and his coach said something about that, about how some kid playing soccer passed out, and he believes there's probably going to eventually end up being lawsuits. And but absolutely, I mean, the thing about school, you know, I barely graduated high school. I failed the MCAS about a billion times, which is a standardized, like, required test to graduate or whatever. And I left school thinking I hated learning, you know, because according to, you know, the school system, you know, and the school system that a lot of us grew up in, if you weren't book smart, you're hands-on smart. That's why you weren't book smart. And the truth was, the reason why I wasn't book smart was because the information, one, was boring. Two, you weren't finding a creative way to get it through to me. And three, you were just asking me to memorize information and regurgitate it. It wasn't anything that was going to help me better understand my life, but the world around me, history, current events, it wasn't something that really seemed that important. So, and how many times were we correct in regards to, like, telling teachers, like, hey, I'm never going to use this shit in my life. What am I like, we don't, like, unless you're an engineer I'm sure there's many other occupations that use more complex math, but the majority of us, like, we use fucking basic math, like, on a daily basis. Like, we don't use anything that complex.
All you need is addition and subtraction and multiplication and division is just a faster way to divide. I mean, addition and subtraction.
Yeah, more or less. You're right. And so the thing is, like, you know, I'm on the same boat. Like, they would tell you, like, hey, you know, like, you must be hands-on smart. They threw me to a vocational school. Yep. And then when I left school and I was, you know, and just working full-time and whatnot, and I got obsessed with documentaries. I got obsessed with reading. I got obsessed with podcasts eventually, which ends up sparking, you know, my podcast, Ripple Effect. And so I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, I'll get to a location. You know, I'd still do quite a bit of commuting for work, but I'd get to a location and I didn't even want to turn off the fucking car. I'm like, I want to hear the rest of this conversation. This podcast is just triggering, like, all these thoughts and ideas and whatnot. And I'm like, I love this. And then I'm learning about history. And then I'm learning about this. I'm learning about that. And then next thing you know, I'm having professors on my podcast. I'm having best-selling authors. I'm having, you know, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who worked at the White House, you know, during the Bush administration. Like, I'm talking to people who make a living off being intellects. And I'm like, how am I holding a conversation with them? I'm like, oh, apparently I'm not as dumb as the school system thought I was. I'm like, it was just the fact that I didn't feel a need to just regurgitate information for no reason. I didn't see how that was necessary. I didn't see how that benefited me.
Yes.
The only way it benefits you is, and that's how you get kids to do it, is saying, you'll get a good paying job. And this is how
you'll get in this school. You'll get into the, yeah, exactly. That's all it is. Yeah. Cause I had an ex that was like that. She was good at the piano and this and that, but cause she was good at memorizing things. But when it came to being creative and trying to figure out and dig, and like, she was not good at that. And I was like, well,
isn't that what we mean when we say somebody's book smart but not street smart, somebody's street smart, not book smart. What we're really saying is that this person was just really good at memorizing information. So according to this game of school that we created, you know, like, they're really good at that one game.
Yeah.
But in regards to, like, just overall intelligence, they don't have the creative thinking, the critical thinking skills. They don't have imagination and all those other things that really come out during just a typical casual interaction with somebody. Like, if you sat down, like, some of my most book smart friends, if we are out at dinner, having drinks or having dinner or whatever, like they're not going to be the most interesting people at that dinner table, you know? And then some of the people who aren't the most book smart, you know, maybe do a typical job, you know, something, you know, maybe more blue collared instead of white collared. They're the ones who have much more interesting ideas and well thought out opinions and maybe have, you know, hobbies that are really intriguing or whatnot. So it's like, what does that tell you? That tells you that, like, okay, it's like being really good at Monopoly or like checkers or whatever. It's like, you're really, really, really good at this one game. And yeah, in the system we've designed, that one game will lead to a successful job, a high paying career or whatnot. But outside of that, it doesn't help you in regards to understanding the world, appreciating the world, under like the bigger questions of like, what's this all about? What's, you know, why are we here? What is truly success? You know, what is truly happiness? What is the most fulfilling things we can do in our lives and can make us appreciate things and be appreciative of our lives and whatnot? Like, so there's so many other bigger questions that those people will never ask because they just play that game of memorizing information, regurgitating information, and TV corporations and marketing have convinced them that the path to happiness isn't asking those questions. The path to happiness is getting that high paying job with the big house and the white picket fence, devoting all your energy and life to this shitty, unfulfilling job. And that's it. And you'll be happy. And you get there and you're not happy.
And anyone chasing a dream is a wild, like, you know, anytime like, cause I do music a lot. And when you do music,
yeah, I do too. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, like people still tell me like, oh, you're still rapping and stuff. Like, yeah, man. Like,
fuck, man.
Is that okay?
This is, you know, and it's funny, like I've used the example of my daughter, right? Like, so, you know, if I was a typical parent and my daughter was dating, you know, she's only turning four, so she's hopefully not dating anytime soon. But when she does eventually start dating, like if she, the typical father, if she likes two boys or two boys like her, and one is like going to law school and comes from a rich family, and the other dude is a struggling musician playing like little bars and clubs, he'd be like, hey, leave that loser and go. You should date the law school guy. But it's like we have created this world where it's like it's all about financial gain, and it's like that's what we consider success. And so it's like if you're pursuing happiness in regards to like pursuing a passion, a hobby, something that is artistic, we look down upon it if you're not making money doing it. Like that's our standard of like success. And it's like the truth is, right, that fucking a person who went to law school, who's probably pressured because his father went to law school or went to engineering school because his dad was an engineer, but yet really loved maybe, who knows, fucking carving wood, painting, drawing, whatever it may be, like that person's unhappy now and probably over-medicated on anti-anxiety pills and depression and all this stuff. I mean, Dr. Christopher Ryan says it all the time, and he's been on my podcast, great author. He wrote Sex of Dawn and Civilized to Death. Two great books, and he also has the podcast called Tangentially Speaking, and he talks about, you know, I heard him talk about this, and I think I talked to him about this too when he was on my show. It's like, what is progress, right? Like, we have more material things, we have more money and all these things, but yet we're unhappy. Then shouldn't we rethink like what the fuck progress is and what winning is, right? Like, because according to our system, winning is like, oh, I got the big house, I got the high paying job, I got all these material things, but yet those people are the ones who are the most over medicated. They're the ones who are have dysfunctional relationships. They're the ones who have families that are you know, don't love each other, don't support each other, and you're spending more time at work than you are at home. And so most of the time, these are the most unhappy people, and yet that's what we call success. That's what we call winning. So if the winners are losing, you know, in regards to happiness and fulfillment, then what the fuck are we doing? Like, we have to rethink the whole thing. Like, maybe the person who we look down upon, who maybe is, you know, for example, I have a buddy who plays basketball overseas. You know, he never made it to the NBA, but he pursued
he's doing what he loves and getting paid for
it. And I remember telling him that all the time. I'm like, listen, regardless how much money you're making, I'm like, even if you're making the exact same money, you know, somebody here is making back at home, but you're doing something you love and you want to do, and we're doing something we dislike, I'm like, you're still in a way better position. Like, most of us like are playing basketball as a hobby, you know, after our shitty job. I'm like, you're doing it as a full-time job, making a living doing it. I'm like, You couldn't ask for anything else than that. I'm like, how many times do you meet old people who say, hey, I wish I didn't pursue my dream as long as I did? Like, you never hear them say that, but you always hear people say, hey, I wish I didn't give up sooner. You know, I wish I pursued this. I wish I pursued that. Like, so what does that tell you? Like, we can learn from those who have lived their lives, reflected on it.
And also not too much compared to other people too, because see, also he probably doesn't feel as good because he's like, I didn't make it to the NBA. But who? That's not everybody's path. That's why I think if we get back to that individual thought process, and I think a lot of it goes back to what we were talking earlier, is that about emotions, that's something that we don't learn in school. That is something that we use every day, and nobody really starts using them until you're a teenager. Then you're repressing them. Then in your 20s, you're all wild and trying to figure it out. And then if you're lucky, you get to be in your 30s and kind of start figuring it out and sorting through it. And I don't think that's a proper way. And I think that is a big issue that happens in our whole world, is that we are all emotionally unstable in certain ways. And we try to like guide it. And nobody really talks about how much effect that has on the whole world.
Well, the truth is we all have some trauma that we're dealing with. We all have some, like, one of the things that it kind of affected me as an adult was growing up, you know, from born in Portugal, came from my immigrant family, came to America, and you know, grew up kind of poor, and I don't like to say poor a lot, because there's always people who are poor and you are, so it's like I don't want people to feel bad for me, but the, you know, we didn't have a lot of money when we came here. My parents were raising a house with like no running water and whatnot. You know, they're just farmers. It wasn't, I mean, to them, they wouldn't even look at their lifestyle as really poor, because that's just the way that they lived. And they were content with that. And which I think is another thing, another good tool to use is to appreciate what you have and don't
enjoy
it. Because there's always somebody who has it worse. I mean, that quote that I'm sure many people have seen the meme before, it's like, your worst day is somebody else's best day.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like, we spend too much time pursuing like more, like it's all about getting more that we
keeping
don't
up with the Joneses.
Time.
Hey, look, they got a new car. I got to get a new car. Why? Don't you like your car?
Yeah. And well, that's the thing. And sometimes it's because you bought that car for the wrong reason in the first place. Maybe then you didn't buy it because you liked the car. Maybe you bought it because you were trying to keep up with somebody. And now those people bought a newer car. Now you have to buy a newer car. If you bought it for the right reason, because you just truly appreciate that car, or you love that car for whatever reason, or you love the feeling you get driving it. You know, I'm a car guy. I love cars, but, you know, to me, it's like there is this.
Yeah, but
this
that's a different thing. Like you said, like I have friends too. Like, I'm not a big car guy, but I have friends like, but you're talking about that's what they do. They get a car, they restore it, and then they just go drive around a couple times on the weekend. They love that, makes their life better. That's perfect. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's perfect. Like, but if you're buying it for, like you said, the wrong reasons to create some kind of status or an illusion of a status, because that's what a lot of people do. They want this status because we, especially now with the increase of the influencers and YouTubers and, you know, how we can all become stars now, or quote unquote, I think that's pushed people to these limits of where they want to outdo everybody, and they're not really trying to find what really would make them happy.
Yeah. Well, we're all influencers. You know, that's kind of the theme I keep trying to tell people my podcast, the Ripple Effect podcast, is that we're all influencers. You know, it's like where every conversation you have, I mean, you're influencing people with your show, every conversation you have, every live stream, you know, even if one person who listens to it gets something from it, then it's worth doing. You know, when I started my podcast, I was the same way. I'm like, if one person listens and one person downloads, then, you know, then it's worth doing. And then it got to the point where I'm like, you know what, if no people listen to it, then I'm getting something from these conversations. Then I become that one person, right? Then I become that one person getting something from this journey of having long form conversations with different people. So it's like there's always somebody benefiting from it. But I truly believe in the idea of the ripple effect. I believe in the idea that people can have a major effect on society, on people around them. You know, I always use the example of like Martin Luther King, for example, like somebody that nobody can really argue isn't a huge historical person and had some impact on society for better or worse or whatever, you know, whatever people's opinion, you know, is on him. It's not important. Like the point is, he obviously is a very influential person, but he was influenced by who, right? Like he might've been influenced by conversations with an uncle, conversations with a friend who said something. We all have these conversations that stick with us, right? We all have these influential people in our lives, like that documentary, that book, that whatever, that song, that artist,
old man something. That you saw at the bus stop that one time and told you a story that stuck with you. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and so think about it. If you're that old man, right? Do you believe you changed the world? No. Mm-hmm. If you're that old man, do you believe that you had a huge impact on society? No, but you did, because maybe one of those kids you talked to at that bus stop was Martin Luther King,
yes,
who did have a bigger influence. So my point is, like, you can indirectly have a huge influence on people. Every time you're having discussions, every time you're open to talking to people, you're open to sharing ideas, sharing perspectives, you're changing the world. And you don't know how big of an effect that is. My podcast has become one of the biggest examples or greatest examples of it, because I was just this construction working Portuguese immigrant failing musician who decided that, hey, you know, I want to do something more fulfilling. Let me put a microphone in front of me and one of my friends and let's talk and see what happens. And then little by little it started growing. And just like a lot of podcasters and people like yourself, like, we all start in the same place. We all start with, like, who the fuck's gonna listen? And you know, and I remember how obsessed I was with the analytics. I was always like, who's downloading and how many downloads am I getting? Which episode's getting downloaded and how many episodes do I have to release to get a lot of downloads or whatever?
See, I'm at that stage right now.
Yeah. Well, one thing you learn is, like, it becomes a distraction and it gets in the way of, like, doing what's really important. And then you'll get to a point, and I'm sure, you know, you'll get there very soon, where you'll be like, you know what? Fuck all that shit. The most important thing is, like, let me just keep doing what I do and let me keep doing what I think is important. Let me keep doing something I'm passionate about and I love, and everything else will fall in place. Everything. I mean, I've been doing my show for 7 years, and, like, just recently, you know, like, every once in a while I have, like, these, like, huge, like, kicks and downloads, like something will happen to a certain guest or a certain show, or I don't know, like a certain post on social media will get a little bit of attention. Or a guest will share my show on their website and then all of a sudden I'll have, like, this boost of, like, fans and listeners, but you never know what that's going to be. So it's like, I have shows that, like, I'm like, why the fuck is that show getting downloaded so much? You know, it's like, you know, I'm like, I thought, like, yeah, it's a good show, but I'm like, this show that I
and then
thought
the one
great,
that you're like, oh, this is the one, man.
and that happens. Yeah. That's happened to me a lot, where I'm just like, oh, this is the show that I think, like, is really going to get a lot of attention. And then you're like, oh, okay. You know, like, nothing really changed. So it's like, you never know. So because you don't know, like, then why obsess over it?
Then, like, change the perspective of where you're just doing it. Like, to, like you said, like, and you are right. Cause that's where I'm trying to go to, is, like, where it's just like, you know what, this is what I think, this is how I feel. And I'm open to listen to what you say, and let's meet in the middle. Let's have these discussions. Like, I'm trying to work some stuff to try to talk to some BLM members and some Antifa members. I want to talk to everybody and be like, why are you feeling like this? Maybe they haven't talked to people that will listen to their side and someone that can give them a thought provoking thing to change their mind. Be like, you know, this is why you shouldn't do this. This is why I'm against communism and Marxism and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure you've listened to, like, my have you listened to any of the Union of the Unwanted shows?
Yes. Well, I just yesterday I finished your great one with G. Edward Griffin. That one was
yeah, that was, like, one of the few ones. Oh, I was God. Like, legit, I haven't gotten nervous in a long time, and I saw him at the Red Pill Expo in Hartford in 2019, but he was getting pulled in every direction, so yeah. I didn't want to bother him or whatever. But there's certain people that, like, you still get nervous talking to. I mean, some of it does go away after a while. Like, you're like, okay, like, you've met enough people that you're like, holy shit, I'm nervous. And then you're like, oh shit, they're just regular people. they're not, you know, like, and then it kind of, you're like, okay, like, I get it. Like, they're just regular people like I am, who have opinions or have ideas. And I just happen to be a huge fan of their work, but you kind of get over it. But yeah, he was one of the few, first one in a long time that I was, like, legit, like, fuck, man, I'm, like, a little nervous about, like, about talking to him.
Because he's the OG, man. He's the original.
He is, yeah. Yeah, he really, yeah, he's been doing it forever. I mean, his work's influenced so many people. I mean, he wrote his book on alternative, like, cancer cures back in, like, yeah. I don't know if it was, like, the late 70s or something like
was
that.
Was that,
I'm
like 60s? And yeah, like.
Yeah, something like that. I'm like, I know it was before I was born. So I'm like, this dude has been red-pilling people and changing perspectives before I was in diapers. So it's like, it, you know, it's crazy. So it's it's fun to have conversations.
That is the ripple effect, though. Like, if you think about it, then you're just kind of sorry for cutting off. But that is the is the ripple effect. He was the little ripple. Not the same way. He is the ripple effect. So he's that pebble. And look how many, what an army he created. Think about all the people that he inspired, that then inspired this person, that inspired this group, that inspired this group. So he is a big cornerstone. And that is like perfect to what your example is of how much an impact you can be by just being a little bit influential to one person.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, when I, you know, he influenced my show, probably, you know, influenced some of your show, mm-hmm. influenced so many people. So, I mean, you think about in those shows, right? Your show, my show, we're going to influence other people to create shows and do their own thing. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it's endless, you know, and that's why I say, if you say nothing, if you do nothing, then you've lost, you know, this goes into another debate. Like a lot of people say, oh, well, what the hell can I do? Like, you can't change anything. So what's the point? I'm like, first of all, the second you think you can't change anything, you have lost. I'm like, you've lost, or you're defeated. But I'm like, the truth is we can't change things. And even if you're indirectly changing things, right? Something as simple as a conversation, you know, like somebody's going to listen to this and they're going to be like, holy shit, like I never looked at that specific topic that way. Or I never thought about mm-hmm. that idea or whatever, that thing. And then you're molding their perspective. So and then when they have a conversation with somebody else, that new perspective that they got from this conversation is going to help mold that person and that person and yes. that person. So it's all, you know, we're all provoking thought. We're all creating a ripple. We're all creating some type of change. And I think that, you know, that can't be overlooked. I these long form conversations, that's why I could foresee the podcast really blowing up way before I started my own podcast, which, you know, was 7 years ago. And I felt like I was late to the party. I could see it get popular. I could see it blow up because
you could see the need for it.
Yes, there was a need for it. There was something refreshing about just hearing, you know, because you have media, TV, everything felt like they were selling you something. Like, so, you know, before podcasts, I was really into documentaries and reading, and you're reading about propaganda, you're reading about corporations and all the science that goes into developing certain products and understanding how to tug at your desires and wants and needs and all the stuff, you know, a lot of the stuff that we talked about in regards to Edward Bernays's research. And then I'm like, where the fuck can I get open-minded discussions? And podcasts were one of those places where I'm like, I could not just hear ideas. I could hear ideas being challenged. And for the most part, until even today, for the most part, kind of uncensored. You look at like our RSS feed, which for people who are listening who don't know what that is, like it's basically it's your feed that gives all that info, you know. So once I upload my podcast, once you subscribe,
it's like the hub that puts it to everywhere. Yes, exactly. It links it everywhere to all the Spotify's and iTunes.
Exactly. So once I put a show out and it just shares that show everywhere, for the most part, that's a place that hasn't been affected by censorship. You know, I myself and many others have had issues with Del Bigtree and iTunes for some reason. You know, my show and many other people's shows before mine and probably after mine that had Del Bigtree on iTunes would magically have technical issues where the show wouldn't play. So, you know, obviously if there's enough coincidences, then it's not a coincidence. But it's one of those things where just like outside of that, like you could still get my show on Spotify. You could still get it on Podcast Addict or any other podcast app. Amazon now is in the realm of podcasts.
You have to diversify in this situations to different media.
But the nice thing is, like, if I get banned off YouTube and the only place I put my content on is YouTube, then I'm fucked. But if I have an RSS feed and I have a podcast, if iTunes decides to censor me, you can still get it from Spotify. If Spotify decides to censor me, you can now, soon, you can get it also from Audible and Amazon, or you can get it from Podcast Addict, or you can get it from any of the other many podcast apps. So it's like it's much harder to censor us there. So I think, you know, outside of just like the fact that it's refreshing that you can go somewhere where you can hear open discussions, open arguments, open debates, and with less, you know, censorship than the mainstream medias, I think it's also good that it's going to be much harder to censor. I mean, will they find a way? Probably eventually. I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, you can still get, you know, open discussions about many different controversial topics. And, you know, I hit on a lot of controversial topics in regards to vaccines, in regards to You know, I'm going to have Dr. Brian Hooker on my show tomorrow, who is the one of the guys that was the leading character in the Vax documentary that, that helped. He was the guy who recorded the Dr. William Thompson conversations and got that research from Dr. William Thompson, who's a author of one of the MMR studies at the CDC, lead author at the MMR study that showed that there was some link between autistic symptoms and the MMR study. And Dr. Brian Hooker was the guy who got those studies and ended up sharing it with the public. But, you know, I don't worry too much on my other platforms of getting censored.
Yeah.
YouTube's the only place where I'm like, oh, this show might be an issue. I might get shadow banned or I might end up getting some issues. But I never took money from YouTube, which helps a lot too. Like, I've never monetized on YouTube because I could see even when I started my podcast, I'm like, when I first started my podcast, I'm like, well, it's not worth monetizing because I don't have that many subscribers. Yeah. And then eventually when I did start getting enough views where I'm like, oh, it might be worth doing, it got to the point where the censorship was so bad that I'm like, listen, why monetize it and then have issues with strikes? I'm like, fuck them. I'm like, I just won't even take any money from them. And then I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I have that's why I have a Patreon page and I like things like that. Cause it's like,
so if you get off of that Patreon page, like, unfortunately we only have 2 minutes left cause it gives us only an hour.
Bad,
so no, you're good. So I wanted you to give us, since we're going to go off, could you give everybody a shout out to, where they could find you at? And, I've got some of it in my link tree in my bio, and then just tell them where they could find the podcast and everything that you want them to go to.
Yeah. Anywhere you can get a podcast where you can subscribe to podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, like I said, Podcast Addict, Spotify, you can get, just look up the Ripple Effect Podcast. You can find it. I'm also on Instagram, Parler, which is like the Twitter competitor, and it's supposed to be unbiased. It's RV36, our YouTube channel, RV36, Instagram, RV36, or you can look up just the RippleEffectPodcast.com, and that will have links to all my social media accounts or whatnot. But just look up the Ripple Effect Podcast. You'll find it everywhere. You can also link with me on Facebook if you want. We do have a Facebook page for my podcast, the Ripple Effect Podcast, but if you want to connect with me personally, you can too. Just throw me a little message, let me know you're not a bot or whatnot, and we'll connect on Facebook too. So yeah, I'm open. I'm always down with connecting with fans and listeners, and yeah, hit me up anywhere.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on, man. It's a big guts, man. And like I said, go to all his info will be in our link tree in our bio. And till the next time, man. Thank you very much for coming on, man. You know how we do it. Hey, wake thanks. The fuck up or get woke the fuck up.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time. I really had fun having this discussion.
Same. All right,
take
man.
Care.
You too, man.